in particular with China. We're going to be doing a Section 301 trade action. It could be about $60 billion.
President Trump launches action towards imposing tariffs against Chinese imports. It's Friday, March 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of our program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also, who wins if the U.S. and China get into a trade war? Trump's unorthodox North Korea diplomacy begins at the top. And reimagining refugee camps as livable cities. How will that help? It's all on today's VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. U.S. President Donald Trump has signed a memorandum on Thursday that initiated actions to consider imposing tariffs on a long list of nearly 1,300 Chinese imported products worth about $60 billion. The U.S. leader targeted China's alleged years-long theft of U.S. intellectual property, imposing new restrictions on Chinese investment in the U.S. that mirror regulations that American companies face when they invest in China.
We have a tremendous intellectual property theft situation going on, which likewise is hundreds of billions of dollars. And that's on a yearly basis.
The president said the United States would use a so-called Section 301 trade tool against China, which gives the United States government the power to unilaterally impose sanctions against countries which it says are not trading fairly.
In particular with China, we're going to be doing a Section 301 trade action. It could be about $60 billion, but that's really just a fraction of what we're talking about. I've been speaking with the highest Chinese representatives, including the president, and I've asked them to reduce the trade deficit immediately by $100 billion.
The decision is the result of an investigation conducted by the U.S. Trade Representative to determine whether Beijing's trade policies may be unreasonable or discriminatory. After a 7-month investigation, the USTR found the policies were in violation. The last time a Section 301 trade tool was wielded was 2 decades ago by President Bill Clinton against Japan to pry open that country's automotive sector. President Trump said Thursday the U.S. wants reciprocal trade and tariff deals with China and other countries.
When they charge 25% for a car to go in, and we charge 2% for their car to come into the United States, that's not good. That's how China rebuilt itself. The tremendous money that we've paid since the founding of the World Trade Organization, which has actually been a disaster for us, it's been very unfair to us.
Trump has repeatedly said that China has been ripping off the United States, a point he emphasized numerous times in public remarks during which he has harshly criticized his predecessors for not doing anything about it. The announcement comes a week after the president signed new tariffs for imported steel and aluminum. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said Thursday that the intellectual property action and the metal tariffs are two sides of the same coin.
This action on intellectual property rights deals with the future. So we're trying to solve both today's problem and problems that otherwise will be forthcoming. That's why these actions are so important, and so important in unison with each other. We will end up negotiating these things rather than fighting over them, in my view.
Earlier, China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokeswoman Hua Chunying said that Beijing hopes the United States would refrain from, in her words, taking actions that are detrimental to both sides. She said China will by no means tolerate any harm to our legitimate rights and interests, and we will definitely take all necessary measures to defend our rights and interests. We hope the U.S. will get a clear understanding of the essence of China-U.S. trade, which is win-win and mutually beneficial, and refrain from taking actions that are detrimental to both sides. In January, Trump hit the Chinese-dominated solar power panel and cell industry with tariffs. Earlier this month, he launched global tariffs on steel and aluminum, a move that China's Commerce Ministry said it strongly opposed. Trade groups representing American retail giants, including Walmart, and tech companies, including Apple, warned that sweeping tariffs would raise prices for consumers in the United States and might not do much to reduce the trade deficit. The president's move sent stock prices tumbling on Thursday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average losing nearly 3% of its value by the close. These are the top stories currently trending on the Asia page at voanews.com. Trump's unorthodox North Korea diplomacy begins at the top. A Chinese paper says China should prepare for military action over Taiwan. Philippine police kill 13 drug suspects in day-long raids. Malaysian police deny prejudice against Kim murder suspects. And American opponents of war tour Vietnam. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington. You're listening to VOA Asia. The newly announced trade actions against China come at a time when President Donald Trump is facing controversy on many fronts at home. They are also about 7 months before midterm elections for the House of Representatives and one-third of the U.S. Senate. Scott Kennedy is the director of the Project on Chinese Business and Political Economy at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies. He told VOA's Victor Beatty that Beijing will retaliate by raising the specter of a trade war between the world's two largest economies, and that China might specifically target industries in states where Trump and the Republican Party are vulnerable.
I think the Chinese have talked most openly about soybeans. The U.S. is one of the largest providers of soybeans to China, but they've not explicitly identified the other sectors that could be targeted. Apparently, their Ministry of Commerce has a list, and they'll begin to work on that. And, you know, the U.S. has a wide range of exports to China, over $125 billion a year last year. So the Chinese have a lot to choose from, not just based on the size of the exports, but targeting politically important states that Donald Trump just barely won in 2016. So they're going to try and not assert just economic pain, but political pain as well.
A White House official said that the action has to do with China's state-led, market-distorting efforts to force, pressure, and steal U.S. technologies and intellectual property.
Objective observers in the United States and elsewhere would agree that China has a lot of practices that violate the letter or spirit of their commitments to the WTO related to intellectual property, including coerced technology transfer. What is not clear about is whether these actions that the Trump administration are going to start is the best way to address these problems, or if they're going to go about it in an effective way. Lots of disagreement, lack of consensus within the United States amongst our allies. And certainly, it's going to cause a lot of rethinking and perhaps head scratching over the next weeks and months.
Analyst David Dollar of the Brookings Institution suggested that using the trade imbalance of some $375 billion may not be the only metric to use. He said the argument that we are losing out to China, that they are cheating everywhere, I think is overblown. The trade balance is largely macroeconomic. In the case of the U.S., we don't save enough, so as a result, we run a trade deficit.
I think David is technically correct that, yes, bilateral trade balances don't really reveal very much. And in fact, sometimes your global trade balance doesn't really say a lot either. And China's global trade balance as a percentage of its GDP has dropped quite a bit. That said, it's clear that China engages in a lot of protectionist behavior that limit opportunities for American exporters and for American companies that want to do business by investing in China, and that Chinese trade practices also distort markets. These things just aren't measurable by bilateral balances. So the Trump administration's justification that we need to launch these trade actions because of the trade balance in and of itself may be technically inaccurate, but that China is behaving in a way that's inconsistent with the goals of having win-win cooperation, I think, true. And the U.S. has tried a lot of different ways to try and get China to change its practices. None have ever been very successful. And so you can sympathize with the frustration of the Trump administration, even though you may disagree with the specific tools that they're about to use.
That's Scott Kennedy of the Center for Strategic and International Studies talking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This news from Asia. The Fukushima District Court on Thursday ruled that Tokyo Electric Power was liable for damages worth about $5.8 million for 213 evacuees who lost their homes and communities because of 2011's Fukushima nuclear disaster. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. President Donald Trump's sudden decision to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un without first working out the framework of a deal could produce an historic agreement, but it would come at the beginning of a long negotiation process. VOA's Seoul correspondent Brian Padden reports that perhaps the best possible diplomatic outcome would be an agreed-upon definition of what denuclearization means.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's willingness to talk about ending his country's nuclear weapons program, as conveyed to a South Korean envoy, is the basis for the expected summits between Kim and South Korean President Moon Jae-in and with U.S. President Donald Trump. However, at a conference in Seoul, North Korea analysts note the leadership in Pyongyang uses a term for denuclearization that has multiple meanings.
They translate shutdown and freeze and also suspension and shielding and also disabling into the same word in Korean. 가동 중단.
Many suspect that Kim will only agree to freeze or marginally reduce his nuclear and missile arsenal for relief from harsh U.S.-led sanctions. North Korea in the past also demanded the withdrawal of U.S. forces in Korea as a condition to give up its nuclear deterrent. The U.S. is not likely to agree to either scenario. Trump himself has said there is a risk that his unconventional approach to diplomacy in agreeing to a summit before any terms, progress, or outcomes are set could fail. However, beginning with talks at the highest level could also produce a mandate that would drive the process forward.
The commitment to denuclearization from both sides, from top down, then opens up a path towards diplomacy and a path towards the negotiation of those details.
Even though the U.S. insists there will be no concessions until concrete denuclearization measures are taken, South Korea could provide an economic incentive by seeking an exemption from sanctions to reopen the jointly run Kaesong Industrial Complex.
Sanctions, or the loosening of sanctions, is what we declare it to be.
North Korea is estimated to have approximately 30 nuclear weapons, hundreds of medium and long-range missiles, and is continuing to produce fissile material at both its nuclear reactor in Yongbyon and in hidden uranium enrichment facilities. It would likely take years to negotiate verification details, access for international inspectors, and to complete the dismantlement process. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Coming up, how will redesigning refugee camps help those people who live there? You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
We have this news from VOA Asia. At least 18 people were killed and dozens wounded when a bus traveling in northwestern Thailand veered off the road and smashed into a tree. The accident occurred late Wednesday evening with a double-decker bus carrying around 50 people returning home from a holiday. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and to share. This is VOA Asia. There are more than 65 million refugees or internally displaced people worldwide. That's more than any other time since World War II. Coming up with better designs for refugee camps can help improve living conditions for these people. As writer Faiza El-Masri tells us in this report narrated by Faith Lapidus, changing the urban designs of camps can help everyone involved.
Brett Moore is chief of the Shelter and Settlements section at the UN Refugee Agency.
I just returned from Bangladesh and the shocking situation there for the Rohingya refugees that have fled persecution in Myanmar. And in the largest camp there called Kutupalong, there's around 700,000 people living in very dense, very poor conditions. You have other situations, for example, say in Chad, in Nigeria, Cameroon, we have displaced populations that have been there for 20 years or more, and they're still living something akin to emergency conditions.
From an architectural perspective, says social architecture designer Sama El-Saket, these camps often do not provide refugees with a comfortable or safe living environment.
Because the camp is laid out in a temporary manner, you end up running into problems, security problems, problems like dealing with sewage. There's issues of sharing bathrooms between a large number of shelters.
Working for her doctorate in urban design at Harvard University, El-Saket studied 7 refugee camps in Africa and Asia. El-Saket says one of the common challenges facing these camps is that they usually end up growing well beyond original plans.
For example, in the Za'atari refugee camp, the refugees wait for the water truck to pass by and then hop on it in order to get from one side of the camp to the other. The facilities and services tend to be placed around the periphery of the camp, making it hard for the refugees that are living in the center of the camp to reach these services.
Reimagining refugee camps can also raise awareness and the money needed to help refugees lead a more normal life during this challenging time. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. Global tech giants Facebook, Twitter, and Google express concern about a possible Singapore plan to bring in a new law to tackle the threat of fake news. At a parliamentary hearing, the three companies, along with others, said that Singapore already has enough rules in place to protect itself. There are fears the new law could lead to government control of the media. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Have you seen the technology of 3D printing? Maybe you have one for your office or your home. Well, it's rapidly changing the process of industrial manufacturing as researchers find innovative ways to employ the new technology. At the recent ARPA-E conference organized by the U.S. Department of Energy, scientists from the University of Maryland showcased an advanced 3D printer combined with a wire-laying head that cuts in half the time needed to manufacture heat exchangers. As VOA's George Putich tells us, this design could change an important part used in many devices, from computers to power plants.
Heat exchangers are some of the most widely used energy transfer devices, helping to cool everything from car engines to power plants. In most cases, the heat is transferred by forcing air over pipes or tubes with circulating water, often pumped from a nearby river or a lake.
Currently, power plants draw about 40% of all of the fresh water supply in the United States.
At the University of Maryland's Advanced Heat Exchangers and Process Intensification Laboratory, researchers say the water consumption could be cut in half with lightweight 3D printed air-cooled heat exchangers.
Water would flow in through one manifold, entering into these water tubes right here, and then flow out through the other manifold. Air would blow across it, cooling these fins, which, as I said before, directly couple the two fluid flows through that polymer wall.
This heat exchanger is created by a polymer 3D printer combined with a wire-laying device. The first head creates a layer of polymer tubes as another head lays copper or aluminum wires. Printing takes almost 24 hours, but the industrial scale machine is much faster.
It has 10 polymer heads, and it's capable of printing of laying at the same time 45 metal fibers, so we're talking about a full layer. By this machine is capable of printing in 8 hours a 1 meter square heat exchanger. We're talking almost 20 kilowatt or 30 kilowatt heat exchanger.
Reduction in weight and cost for 3D printed heat exchangers reaches 50%, depending on the application, which can range from power plants to air conditioning to cooling of electronic devices.
For electronics cooling, for example, so far our experimental results have shown that we could have up to 52% reduction in cost, while we have 26% increase in performance.
An added advantage is that 3D printers allow creating very complex geometries with a resolution between the cooling wires as low as 100 microns. The project was partially funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. George Putich, VOA News.
VOA Asia's own Allison Schuyler Ogden is getting ready to go out and see the thousands of young people and their supporters that are expected here in Washington, D.C. Saturday for the so-called March for Our Lives. Now, this march was organized after the Valentine's Day shooting of 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. The march also comes at the time of the Cherry Blossom Festival here in Washington and a concert by pop diva Demi Lovato. But how do security and first responders prepare for such large events? VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Austin, Texas, on how authorities at the recent South by Southwest Festival kept everyone safe.
Hello, how are you?
Tens of thousands of people from around the world gather in Austin every spring for the annual Music, Film, and Technology Festival, South by Southwest. Many attendees say they have other things on their minds besides having a good time.
If I look around, are there like cops around? Are there guardrails up? Do they have like exit signs that are like clearly posted? But does it ever deter me from going somewhere? No.
Thoughts of the mass shooting in Las Vegas at an outdoor concert last year and the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando in 2016 are making some attendees more vigilant.
It does cross my mind anytime I go to a show of like large size or anything that something like that could happen, because it is a concern that is possible. It makes me more aware of what's going on around me. I pay more attention to the people around me.
Mass shootings are not the only types of crime the police are trying to prevent.
There have been some incidents around the globe and around the country where vehicles have been used as weapons in crowds. So we do have a lot of intersections that we're using vehicles to block, and we also use dump trucks to block some of these intersections.
In addition to police officers in uniform, undercover officers roam the grounds to monitor suspicious activity. And if something catastrophic were to happen, paramedics are trained to use these portable mini hospitals on wheels, which can move patients from a crowded environment into a waiting ambulance quickly.
In context of mass shootings, whether it be the Las Vegas incident or the Pulse nightclub shooting, we know that having medics at a forward position so that they're able to treat patients immediately, we build the logistics in place on the front end so that we can be proactive as opposed to reactive and access those patients very quickly.
There are also tools on site to help reduce the number of people who need to go to a hospital.
So we set up basically a mini emergency room. It's complete with shelter, water, power. We do a Wi-Fi network that's kind of a higher band so that we're able to monitor patients with an EKG or cardiac monitor.
First responders say after every mass shooter event or act of terrorism, they study it and learn from it to further improve security.
Now that it's raising a lot more awareness, that people are taking attention to it, which is very important, and I can only see things getting better from here.
Hi, how are you?
Many attendees we spoke with say they are not afraid of events like this one, just more aware. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Austin.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take us with you. find us at voanews.com. And let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the day.